This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Good morning, Macoupin County. Welcome to Mark My Words. I am Mark Duggar with the Macoupin County Farm Bureau. The omnibus spending bill passed last week is a win for agriculture, according to R.J. Carney, Congressional Relations Director at AFBF. The bill repeals mandatory country of origin meat labeling, which will end the threat of $1 billion in tariffs from Canada and Mexico. The bill also includes the Agriculture Appropriations Bill, which provides about $21 billion in discretionary funding for a variety of programs that Carney said are critical for farmers and ranchers. Also of note, the bill did not include a nationwide standard for labeling of food containing genetically modified ingredients. Congress's failure to act will bring a heavy cost and a patchwork of state labeling mandates to farmers and consumers as early as next month, according to Carney. The president has announced he will sign the bill. Farm Bureau supports the actions of the U.S. in achieving a strong agreement on export competition and setting a new direction for agricultural trade negotiations at the World Trade Organization's 10th Ministerial Conference, noted AFBF President Bob Stallman in a statement. Stallman says eliminating trade-distorting export subsidies and achieving disciplines on the use of export credits will lower agricultural trade barriers and strengthen U.S. agriculture's ability to pursue market opportunities in international trade. He added that the measures adopted on food aid also will support U.S. programs that continue to provide food assistance around the world. Stallman noted that Farm Bureau looks forward to moving beyond the Doha round and constructing a new pathway for negotiations by the WTO to advance a relevant agenda for agricultural trade in the 21st century. He also said Farm Bureau strongly appreciates the work of United States Trade Representative Froman, Chief Agricultural Negotiator Vetter, and the entire U.S. team for their efforts in reaching a positive outcome to the WTO ministerial. A new online survey launched by the American Farm Bureau Federation will collect feedback from farmers and ranchers about their experiences with 10 agricultural department programs housed in three agencies. Results will be used by AFBF to develop recommendations on how USDA can enhance its programs and make them more useful to farmers and ranchers. All farmers and ranchers, not just Farm Bureau members, are encouraged to take the survey, which takes about 10 minutes to complete. A new video produced by AFBF highlights the struggles a California farm family has encountered with federal water regulations. The video also illustrates how the climate regarding water regulations will likely become much worse and encompass the entire nation under the widely reviled Waters of the U.S. rule. As the enforcer of water regulations, the Army Corps of Engineers has told fourth-generation tree, vine, and wheat grower John Duarte, a member of Farm Bureau in California, that he broke the law simply by plowing his land in rural Tehama County. Experts say that under the EPA's WOTUS rule, the same type of regulatory enforcement could become commonplace, threatening farmers across the nation. EPA has said that farmers have no need to worry about the rule because normal farming is exempt from regulation. But what's happening to the Duarte family shows how the EPA and the Corps work around that exemption. The Corps and EPA aren't trying to micromanage farmers, they're trying to stop farmers, according to Duarte. He says they're trying to turn our land, our farmland, into habitat preservation. They're simply trying to chase us off of our land. In August, the Environmental Protection Agency proposed a rule revising its regulation governing certification of applicators of restricted-use pesticides. The comment deadline of December 23rd has been extended to mid-January. A formal announcement will be published in the Federal Register shortly. AFBF will file comments in January. Like many of you, I've always wondered why on the calendar the day after Christmas was called Boxing Day. For many of us, the day after Christmas is a return to those shopping venues to pick up that last bargain or exchange an item due to the wrong size, color, shape, or whatever reason we can think of at the time. Few Americans have any inkling that there even is such a thing as Boxing Day, let alone what the reason might be for a holiday so named. And even though Boxing Day is celebrated in Australia, Britain, New Zealand, and Canada, not all that many people in those countries have much of a notion of as to why they get the 26th of December off. Boxing Day might well be a statutory holiday in some of those lands, but it's not a well-understood one. Despite the lively images suggested by the name, it has nothing to do with pugilistic expositions between tanked-up family members who have dearly been looking forward to taking a round out of each other for the past year. Likewise, it does not gain its name from the overpowering need to rid the house of an excess of wrappings and mountains of now useless cardboard boxes the day after Saint Nick arrived to turn a perfectly charming and orderly home into a maelstrom of discarded tissue paper. The name also has nothing to do with returning unwanted gifts to the stores they came from, hence its common association with hauling about boxes on the day after Christmas. The holiday's roots can be traced to Britain, where Boxing Day is also known as St. Stephen's Day. Reduced to the simplest essence, its origins are found in a long-ago practice of giving cash or durable goods to those of the lower classes. Gifts among equals were exchanged on or before Christmas Day, but beneficiaries to these less fortunates were bestowed the day after. And that's about how as much as anyone can definitely say about its origin, because once you step beyond that point, it's straight into the quagmire of debated claims and dueling folklorists, which, by the way, is what we're about to muddy our boots with. Although there is general agreement that the holiday is of British origin, and it has to do with giving presents to the less fortunate, there is still dispute as to how the name came about or precisely what unequal relationship is being recognized. At various times, the following origins have been loudly asserted as the correct one. First, centuries ago, ordinary members of the merchant class gave boxes of food and fruit to tradespeople and servants the day after Christmas in an ancient form of Yuletide tip. These gifts were an expression of gratitude to those who worked for them, in much the same way that one now tips the paperboy an extra $20 at Christmas time or slips the building superintendent a bottle of fine whiskey. Those long-ago gifts were done up in boxes, hence the day coming to be known as Boxing Day. Christmas celebrations in the old days entailed bringing everyone together from all over a large estate, thus creating one of the rare instances when everyone can be found in one place at one time. This gathering of his extended family, so to speak, presented the lord of the manor with a ready-made opportunity to easily hand out that year's stipend of necessities. Thus, the day after Christmas, after all the partying was over and it was almost time to go back to far-flung homesteads, serfs were presented with their annual allotment of practical goods. Who got what was determined by the status of worker and his relative family size, with spun cloth, leather goods, durable food supplies, tools, and whatnot being handed out. Under this explanation, there was nothing voluntary about this transaction. The lord of the manor was obligated to supply these goods. The items were chucked into boxes, one box for each family, to make carrying away the results of this annual restocking easier. Thus, the day came to be known as Boxing Day. Many years ago, on the day after Christmas, servants in Britain carried boxes to their masters when they arrived for the day's work. It was a tradition that on this day, all employers would put coins in the boxes as a special end-of-the-year gift. In a closely related version of this explanation, apprentices and servants would, on that day, get to smash open small earthenware boxes left for them by their masters. These boxes would house small sums of money specifically left for them. This dual version theory melds the two previous ones together into a new form, namely the employer who was obligated to hand out something on Boxing Day, but this time to recipients who were not working the land for him and thus were not dependent on him for all they wore and ate. The box thus becomes something beyond ordinary compensation, in a way goods to landed serfs was not. Yet it's also not a gift in that there's nothing voluntary about it. Under this theory, the boxes are an early form of Christmas bonus, something employees see as their entitlement. Boxes in churches for seasonal donations to the needy were opened on Christmas Day, and the contents distributed by the clergy on the following day. The contents of this alms box originated with the ordinary folks in the parish who were under no direct obligation to provide anything at all and were certainly not tied to the recipients by an employer-employee relationship. In this case, the box in Boxing Day comes from that one gigantic lockbox the donations were left in. More elaborate versions of this origin involve boxes kept on sailing ships. The title has been derived by some from the box which was kept on board of every vessel that sailed upon a distant voyage for the reception of donations to the priest, who, in return, was expected to offer masses for the safety of the expedition to the particular saint having charge of the ship, and above all, of the box. The box was not to be opened until the return of the vessel, and we can conceive that, in cases where the mariners had had a perilous time of it, this casket would be found to enclose a tolerable offering. The mass was, at the time, called Christmas, and the boxes kept to pay for it were, of course, called Christmas boxes. The poor amongst those who had an interest in the fate of these ships, or of those who sailed in them, were in the habit of begging money from the rich that they might contribute to the mass boxes, and hence the title, which has described to our day, giving to the anniversary of St. Stephen's martyrdom, the title of Christmas Boxing Day, and, by corruption, its present popular one of Boxing Day. Whichever theory one chooses to back, the one thread common to all this is the theme of one-way provision to those not inhabiting the same social level. As mentioned previously, equals exchange gifts on Christmas Day or before, but lessers, be they tradespeople, employees, servants, serfs, or the genetic poor, received their boxes on the day after. It is to be noted that the social superiors did not receive anything back from those they played Lord Bountiful to. A gift in return would have been seen as a presumptuous act of laying claim to equality, the very thing Boxing Day was an entrenched bastion against. Boxing Day was, after all, about preserving class lines. And on behalf of the Macoupin County Farm Bureau, where membership means value, happy Boxing Day and happy New Year, and may God bless America.